Who is Cole Kublik?
No idea.
This could be trouble.
Now with the call, Cole Kublik.
Auburn.
We just talked to Cole Kublik a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Jim Mellett, number 61.
I get.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor.
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Welcome back in, Cube Show, hour number four, live in the Southern RV Wholesale Studio. Go to srvwholesale.com. That's srvwholesale.com. Check out fifth wheels, travel trailers, toy haulers, and more. You can trade yours in. You can finance on site. All right there at Southern RV Wholesale on Jordan Lane. Go to srvwholesale.com. Brandon Marcello joins us now to continue the Auburn football conversation from last hour. Brandon, good morning. How you doing?
Good, Cole. How are you?
Doing well. You can find Brandon's work at auburn.247sports.com or at B. Marcello on Twitter. The situation with Kyle Davis, I believe you were first to report yesterday that he had been dismissed from the team, didn't make the trip to LSU. If they knew that he wasn't going to make the trip and something had happened, why do you think it took so long for him to be actually dismissed from the team?
Well, I think a situation arise that similar to the issues he's faced in the past, and they had to wait till after the game to kind of address it, but they knew that he could not play in that game Saturday as a result of what happened. But I think more than anything, they're wanting to sit down with them and discuss everything, and to do that they needed to wait till Sunday and then on Monday make the announcement to kick him off.
So how does that change either this offense or, in particular, the wide receiver group, in your opinion, moving forward?
Well, I think it's a huge loss. He was one of the receivers able to stretch the field for him. You know, he's averaging 30 yards a catch. He was their top, one of their top receivers outside of Will Hastings and Ryan Davis. And now all of a sudden you're going to have to turn to Nate Craig Myers, who I thought was in store for a big year this season but hasn't quite emerged yet. But it's obvious that he's going to have to step up a little bit. Sal Cannella stepped in and kind of started in Kyle Davis's place. Didn't really have a great game, or a good game for that matter, against LSU. And they're just going to need other guys to step up, and Jared Sims is going to have to get some confidence in some of these other receivers as well. But I think it's a very big loss for him, and I think it affected them at LSU. They could have done some different things in the passing game.
Brandon Marcello with us of 247 Sports. You mentioned Nate Craig Myers. I had people tweet me asking if he was injured for the game. He obviously did play. He was out there. But what do you think is responsible for his lack of production this fall?
It's a great question. You know, he had come into, I think, like the third drive, if I remember, at LSU. And, you know, when Kyle Davis was announced he wasn't playing, I thought, you know, Nate Craig Myers would be out there quickly, and he wasn't. You know, I think they kind of try and put their best blockers out there, but Nate Craig's done a good job at that at times as well. And I don't know. I think it's obvious, though, now the coaches know they're going to play him more. They brought him out in front of the media, in fact, yesterday, which obviously goes to show you how much the coaches are going to have to put stock in him moving forward. But I thought after what we saw in the spring and then what I was hearing from workouts and everything in the summer, he was a guy they were going to lean on quite a bit, and that just hasn't quite been the case, and I can't really get a straight answer as to why.
Brandon Marcello with us talking Auburn football. Find him on Twitter at B. Marcello. So the offense stagnant in the second half, to say the least. We played some audio of some of Gus Malzahn's responses yesterday. Do you foresee major changes even possible for this offense the rest of the season?
Not really. I don't see how you could. I mean, during the bye week, they'll tweak things, but I don't see how they make a major overhaul. You know, this idea that Jarrett Stidham does an audible and all this, I think it's kind of being overblown just because, one, Auburn calls the quote-unquote, if you want to call it an audible, from the sideline anyway, they could check out plays based off when the coaches see him from the box and they voice it down to the sideline. Two, with the RPOs, that's almost an RPO, or excuse me, an audible built into the system for them. You know, they ran 13 RPO plays by our account at auburnundercover.com, and they mostly ran out of it, and that's up to Jarrett Stidham to make that read. So he's got some freedom, probably more freedom than any quarterback Gus Malzahn's coach within that system. How they go about changing things, I mean, they could implement some different formations, some different looks, which actually they ran a different look on one drive and utilized it more in the second half, but then it got shut down at LSU. I think the bye week's going to be more about getting guys healthy and getting them confident in the system they're running. I just don't see them making a big, big change with that offense.
Brandon Marcello with us. We heard that comment from Malzahn and about Stidham having more freedom and the ability to do more at the line of scrimmage than other quarterbacks he's had. Do you have any idea what kind of freedom other quarterbacks had, what the difference is maybe between Stidham and Nick Marshall, Chris Todd, Cam Newton, Ryan Applin?
I think it's all about semantics with Gus Malzahn. I think it goes back to what I said about the RPOs. I think that's the freedom where most of his freedom's at. Now, he can make protection calls and all that and help with that at the line of scrimmage, but I don't think he's in a situation where, say, for example, like Nick Marshall, I mean, running the zone read, there were times that zone read plays were predetermined from the sideline. Not all the time, but sometimes. I think Jarrett Stidham, obviously the offense is different with him, but just because of the RPOs that are built in that system, he has the freedom to run or throw. And for the most part, he's choosing to hand the ball off. And especially at LSU, there were a couple things open that either he just didn't notice or he felt like Kerryon Johnson was doing well enough to just hand the ball off and it would do things. But there were opportunities there in the second half to throw the ball, and he chose not to.
Brandon Marcello joining us, discussing this Auburn football team that will face off against Arkansas this weekend. Maybe, I guess, if there's something that's going to work against this team this weekend, they might not have to change much, Brandon, to be able to still get a win this week.
Yeah.
Do you believe that Auburn needs to look impressive to some certain extent to either win the team back, win the fan base back, or to give themselves any chance to improve moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would more than anything give confidence into the fans. I think the team will be okay because I think they understand that they're kind of beat up right now. They're going through some injuries. Trey Williams is out. Trey Matthews is out. Casey Dunn at center is out. They've lost some kind of key pieces going into this game. I think they know that they're going to get Arkansas's best. And what does that mean as far as a score? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Auburn should win easily. But I think more than anything, a score would impress fans or maybe win some folks back over. But they absolutely cannot lose at Arkansas. I think that pretty much is clear. And as for the coaches, I think they're going to go in, just try to get a win, and go and get into this bye week as quickly as possible because they've got to heal up, reevaluate some things. But as far as, you know, winning impressively, they should. But if they don't, I think it, more than anything, they'll just upset the fans a little bit more, even if they do win. Everybody's kind of easily triggered at this point with the football program.
If Golson goes back to center, assuming Prince Tega back at left tackle, Darius James right tackle, Braden Smith right guard, who is Markell Harrell the starter at left guard, and do you know who would his backup would be?
Yeah, I think Markell would be, and the backup's a great question. They might have to maneuver more guys around and see what happens. But I thought Markell did a pretty good job against LSU when he came in for what he was being asked to do. You know, they can't afford one more injury on that offensive line. Say one more guy goes down, no matter at what spot at Arkansas, they could be in a little bit of trouble there. You know, they felt comfortable about seven or eight of their players along the offensive front. You lose another one, that really hurts them. And I think because of what they decided to do when they benched Prince Tega, they kind of took an extra guy out of the rotation, so to speak, as far as their best rotation. But now Prince Tega's back out there. And then if you lose, say, another offensive lineman, that would definitely hurt them. But I think Markell Harrell did a pretty good job at left guard. And going into Arkansas, this is a Arkansas defensive line they should be able to handle.
Great stuff, Brandon. Always appreciate the time. Look forward to doing it again soon.
All right. Thanks, Cole.
Thank you. Brandon Marcello at B Marcello via Twitter. Can find his work at 247sports.com. Intriguing he brings up that offensive line depth. I mean, that was something that was a strength of this team coming into the season, and they've needed every bit of it this fall. My question mark for that group is, where's Wilson Bell? I mean, Wilson Bell's a guy that I evaluated at Florida State, studied the film, saw him do some really nice things, saw him play some good football against some of the best offensive lines in the country last year, and can't find his way onto the field. Let's get to 10 after tweets.
Bring me the tweets!
Very odd situation for me personally, because I've seen him be successful in meaningful football games. I mean, you can say it ain't the SEC, but he did it against some really good ACC defensive lines last year and played at a high level a lot of the time. William Tucker responds to our poll question of the day. I would go with other if that was an option.
I submitted my resignation. So as of 9:53 this morning, I will no longer be the program director or part of this program because of this stuff. In fact, thinking about just getting off Twitter altogether too.
Jason Brock tweets, at Cube Show, Gus Malzahn sounded like a dead man walking in his press conference yesterday. Loss at Arkansas seals his fate.
Well, some could argue his fate may already be close to sealed. Although, I think for Auburn fans, you can't do anything but stay. If you're an Auburn fan, think about this. You're an Auburn fan, Cole. Can Gus Malzahn do anything to make you feel better about the team until the Georgia game?
Well, yeah.
I mean, if he
beat Arkansas and Texas A&M.
But if you beat Arkansas, Texas A&M, Arkansas, most people, almost everybody thinks Auburn's going to win that game. You're talking about
it. But
the
reason I brought that up to Brandon is I've had a few people reach out to me and say he needs to win big this weekend. And I'm just thinking, no. I mean, I get it. You want to look good. Now, I think the team probably needs a impressive win. And that doesn't even mean by 40 points, but look good to build confidence going into the bye week and then hopefully be able to implement some sort of a plan that can come out and be successful against A&M. But why would you say they need to win by 30 or Malzahn needs to win by 30? What's that going to change? If they win by 3 or 30, what is that? That doesn't put you any closer to winning an SEC championship.
No, but it's all about the perception of where the team is going.
Sure.
But what I ask you, though, is all Auburn, I think, can do is keep Gus Malzahn at this point at no more near nuclear level threat for his job. I don't think he can make people feel better about it because of what happened at LSU until you get to the Georgia and Alabama, you know, 2 out of 3 weeks.
Joshua Wilbanks tweets, loving the show today at Cube Show.
Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
Was that in response to the poll question?
It wasn't. It was just tweet at
like
the show.
March Madness tweets, you wouldn't believe this, Cole. Surprise, surprise, Kentucky on top of the SEC poll, but check this out. Alabama number 4, according to the media. Auburn number 9.
Wow.
Now, I know we won't talk. Auburn apparently supposed to be really good, but I think they were picked like 11th or something last year, so some improvement. Buffalo Nickel, if you could tell me who the SEC media thinks is the worst team in the SEC. The worst. I'll give you a hint. There's 14 of them.
I'm going to go with LSU.
That's right. Buffalo Nickel is yours, Cole. Also, South Carolina picked 11th.
They lost some dudes, but
wow.
And Sendarius Thornwell's gone. Was he the player of the year? He was player of the year last year, right?
In the SEC?
Yeah. I think he was.
I looked at it.
My favorite part is the all-SEC teams. Like, I think that sometimes I make fun of people not being able to place, you know, offensive linemen at the right position when they're voting for their all-SEC team. First team all-SEC. Michael Porter Jr., Missouri.
Played none.
0.0 minutes in the SEC. Second team all-SEC, Colin Sexton, Alabama. Kevin Knox, Kentucky.
No, okay, I start to see where you're going here. By the way, there were two players of the year last year. The SEC, Malik Monk and Sendarius Thornwell.
They're both good players. Jason Wilcox quotes our poll question of the day and adds, I'd say more likely none will be than likely any of those will be. Okay. Polls are hard, man. Mad Chad at Chad 18 Williams responds to our poll question of the day with Jeff Brom. Polls are hard.
Mine was.
Unbelievable. We'll get to a break. Lance Taylor.
Someone should take away internet privileges for some of these people.
Of the Jocks Roundtable maybe can answer our poll question.
Okay.
We'll ask.
He says other, I hang up on him.
We'll ask right after this. Lance Taylor of the Jocks Roundtable joins us every Thursday. Lines with Lance. LT, how you doing?
I'm okay. I got to ask you a question real quick.
Okay.
So I was just driving through my neighborhood, which doesn't have sidewalks, and it was actually about an hour ago. I was dropping little man off at school, and so there's morning traffic, and there's this guy that's jogging down the side of the road, and I'm a runner, but my problem is you've got all these morning commutes, people going to work and people going to school, and this guy's basically on the road obstructing traffic and really putting his own safety at risk. And there's tons of trails and tracks around here because I run them. Is that not a problem?
I don't think people care, honestly.
Yeah, but I'm saying if somebody clips him, that's a big problem, isn't it?
It's a big problem, yeah. I had a lady running yesterday when I was on the way to do the show with you guys up the hill opposite, not the hill that goes to the station, but the hill over by the barbecue joint right there. And she was 7-8 feet out in the middle of the street running up the hill.
See, and I don't know about you, you know, whenever I run, I've run on roads like that before, idiotically, and the only thing that's in my mind is somebody coming up behind me and clipping me. And, you know, or actually, you know, sideswiping me or something. So I don't do that anymore. There's too many options.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
No, I'm with you.
Especially when you got 16 and 17-year-olds driving into school. Anyway, I had to get that out of the way.
No, it's all good. Lance Taylor, the Jocks Roundtable with us. One thing that we're having trouble understanding today is, and I'm sure you guys get this with your Dreamland poll questions of the day, our poll question of the day, I'm going to ask you, but we don't understand why people feel the need to give us other options of answers. So if we give you four options, why do you respond on the tweet with a fifth or a sixth? The point of the poll question is to choose one of the four that we asked. So our poll question of the day is, who is most likely to be coaching in the SEC in 2018? Chip Kelly, Bob Stoops, John Gruden, Bobby Petrino. Which direction would you go?
I probably would go Jimbo Fisher.
Swear to God, Lance, I'm hanging up on you.
What I did. I'm going to go Bobby Petrino.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling that Bobby Petrino is going to be Louisville's next head coach.
He leads the way with 52% of the vote right now.
Yeah, and I just wonder, and I don't know what your perspective on this whole thing is. And look, and it was an inexcusable loss this past week against Boston College. And Lamar Jackson is doing everything on his own. And Bobby Petrino, obviously, is not only coaching these guys up, but really doesn't have the talent that he had last year. And that's all on Bobby Petrino. But I still think, based on what he did in the SEC with Arkansas in the West, to to have them at number three the final week of November in 2011, beyond impressive. And I think he really could do good things at Tennessee.
All right, so because you said the next Louisville head coach, so you misspoke there. But you think he'll be the next Tennessee head coach?
Yeah, my bad. Louisville's coach will be the next Tennessee head coach. That's just me going out on a limb and guessing.
So
based on the way Louisville's playing right now, there's a distraction. I don't know if he's driving motorcycles again or whatever, but there's something going on there.
Lance Taylor, the Jocks Roundtable with us. There is, in my opinion, a lack of quality candidates out there, and I think that's why some of the names like Chip Kelly, Bob Stoops, and John Gruden continue to surface and float around. Is there a guy or guys out there that you think maybe are next in line and set up to be really good collegiate head football coaches that maybe we're not talking enough about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, guys right now in the Big Ten, P.J. Fleck and Jeff Brohm, I mean, they've done really good jobs, at least early on, at Purdue and Minnesota, at least their competitive product. Mike Norvell at Memphis, you know, just got an impressive win over Navy. It's a fun offense to watch. That's the guy we're not talking about. The AAC is the place you can really go gut and bring in good coaches. I mean, you look at Scott Frost at UCF. They were 0-12 2 years ago, Cole. They were in a bowl last year. They're undefeated right now. So I think there's a lot of names out there. I know it's always a roll of the dice when you go get a mid-major guy, but just because a fan base wants a guy that is proven, it's not always realistic. And guys like Scott Frost and Mike Norvell will take jobs in the SEC. John Gruden ain't taking that job. It ain't happening.
Yeah, no, just look at a salary for what he's doing right now. I don't see how anyone in their right mind could walk away from that gig. Lance Taylor of the Jocks Roundtable with us. Is this the biggest point spread that Tennessee has ever faced as an underdog in the history of the program?
Probably. I can't recall anything. We've seen some bad Tennessee teams over the last decade, but, I mean, we're talking 34, 35 points now. This is crazy. And, look, and you grew up an SEC guy, and you actually played in the conference, and you watched this rivalry for decades. It's really sad where it is right now because I don't even consider it a rivalry. I mean, Nick Saban's never lost as Alabama's head coach to Tennessee. There's only been 2 one-possession games. This isn't going to be a one-possession game. You've watched both of these teams. I don't know how Tennessee scores more than 10 points. Now, you know, it's college football, and Syracuse just beat Clemson, and we saw 4 top 10 undefeated teams go down. But it's just a terrible product right now. They've got no skill at quarterback. For this rivalry to be where it is right now, it's embarrassing.
How is Mississippi State an 11-point favorite against Kentucky? I realize they're at home, but Kentucky's playing pretty good ball this year.
Yeah, I agree. But when you go back and you look at Kentucky, I mean, who have they beaten?
No, they played.
And I know they've only got one loss, and that one loss they were leading by double digits against Florida. I still don't know how they lost that game. You were there. You actually covered that game. I think Kentucky's okay. I think Mississippi State's okay. This is one of those spots where the line will dictate what happens, in my opinion. It's 11 for a reason, so I think Mississippi State will win this game by double digits. I really do. This number should have come out Mississippi State 4 or 5 is where I would have listed. And for it to come out double digits, all of the money will be on the other side. And I think this is a spot where Nick Fitzgerald goes off and Mississippi State runs away with it.
I also feel like LSU -6.5 is pretty low. I mean, this is the bad Ole Miss team. I know they thrashed Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt's as bad as I think I've ever seen them.
Yeah, and I agree with you. It's another one of these smelly fish. So, therefore, I look at Ole Miss and Shea Patterson making some plays. You know, the problem with Ole Miss is they're a one-dimensional team, and when you're one-dimensional against the Dave Aranda defense, he can make you look stupid. I still think Patterson will put up some numbers, and I can't fit Orgeron. It's a team that let Jordan Chun run for 191 yards just a couple of weeks ago and lost to Troy, who really had problems manufacturing any points whatsoever against South Alabama. So just because LSU played a really impressive half against Auburn, I still don't trust them, and I'll take the points at home here.
Do you think for confidence in the fan base, the players, the program moving forward to be able to have a chance to do some good things this year, does Auburn need a big win against Arkansas Saturday, in your opinion?
I don't know, Cole, because I think Auburn fans are so disappointed right now with what happened this past weekend. I think they just need to make sure they win. I mean, a loss here would be devastating. I mean, that was a devastating loss based on the fact that they were up 20, and they really controlled their own destiny to achieve everything that they wanted at the beginning of the season, and now they no longer have that. At least they don't control it. But if you were to lose this game, wow. I mean, it really, really gets bad, and wheels probably come off. I don't think they lose this game, and I don't know if an impressive win is needed. What is needed is either a win over Georgia or Alabama, and I think you probably would agree there. I mean, sooner or later, you got to beat a rival. And it looks like Georgia and Alabama are both elite teams, and if Gus Malzahn really wants job security, he needs to win one of those games.
Yeah, you get to 0 for your last six against those, and it's not good at all. So
yeah, that's the problem.
Nationally, is there a line or two that sticks out to you that just doesn't feel right this weekend, since so many SEC lines maybe don't feel comfortable for you?
Yeah, I'm treading a little lightly this weekend based on what we saw last week. I think people are expecting another one of these just crazy upset-filled weeks, and I just don't know if I see them out there. Let's take a look at, like, and I was talking about Scott Frost. I mean, they are due a loss, and that's a really good Central Florida team. But playing Navy in this situation, I think that number is a little inflated based on the fact that Navy's coming off that loss to Memphis, and Central Florida is undefeated right now. I mean, you can get over a touchdown Navy at home. You don't see that ever, because Navy is 17-4 since they entered the AAC. So I would take a look at Navy there. But as far as national games, nothing really jumps out right now. Oklahoma State is a little inflated at Texas based on the fact that Tom Herman is so good against top 25s. And really top tens, and they were down 20-0, kind of in an LSU spot against Auburn last week, and they battled back and took the lead and had an opportunity to actually beat Oklahoma. But I think this weekend, I don't think they're competitive against Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State will run away with it.
What do you make of Notre Dame right now?
I think they're good. And, you know, I watch a lot of USC football, Cole, and USC can't tackle. And if you can't tackle against a team that averages over 300 yards on the ground, you got a problem. Josh Adams is really good. I don't understand what's going on with USC. They turn the football over at an alarming rate. They can't tackle. They've got a ton of talent. The offensive line's kind of a mess. But outside of that, they've got what you would need right now to win the Pac-12, considering, in my opinion, the best team of the Pac-12 is Stanford, a team they've already beaten by 14 points. But I think Notre Dame's pretty good. My problem with them is they're a little one-dimensional. I don't know if Wimbush, if needed, could consistently throw the football to beat you. I don't think they'll need that against USC. I think they'll be able to gash USC on the ground, and USC just, again, the way they're turning the football over on the road, I think Notre Dame will get them here. I don't know if Notre Dame can navigate that schedule. I mean, you look at the back end, Cole, and I believe if they do go, they finish it off and go 11-1, I think they'll be in the college football playoff. I just don't know if they can beat those teams on that schedule when you still got NC State, and I think they'll take care of Miami, but NC State,
Southern Cal,
Navy, Southern Cal, and Stanford, I mean, those are tough outs.
Your Rams continue to score points. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit of NFL with you. 4-2 now in the season. They put 27 up on the Jags. Are you confident that this team can continue doing what they've done the first 6 weeks?
I lost you there for a second.
Are you confident the Rams can continue to put up points the way they have the first 6 weeks of the season?
Yeah, you know, and they would have had more this past weekend against Jacksonville, but turned the football over. If Jared Goff doesn't turn the football over, and it was just a late fumble by Robert Woods, Sean McVay puts them in good situations, and the separation the receivers are getting right now is pretty amazing. I've been blown away with just how well that team has responded to a 31-year-old. I don't remember the last time. I don't remember being 31. I don't know about you, but I know I'm still very immature, but I can't imagine being a head coach in the NFL at 31 and having players respond to you in year one like this, and having a 70-year-old defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips, who's one of the best in the business. It's really a fun product to watch, Cole. And this is going to sound bad, but if you're a Rams fan or a fan of any contender in the NFC, things got better for you this past weekend when Aaron Rodgers went out. Because Atlanta's now lost back-to-back home games against average AFC East opponents. And Philadelphia looks to be the best team in the NFC. But, I mean, how good really is Philadelphia? We really don't know. So I think the NFC's wide open. But the Rams do lead the NFL in scoring right now. So I'm excited that they're at least in the mix, sitting at 4-2.
All right. Before I let you run, I want to ask how much or how different are your opinions on the Super Bowl and Super Bowl winner just based off injuries this NFL season? I mean, J.J. Watt, Odell Beckham, now Aaron Rodgers, Jameis Winston beat up. How much has your opinion changed on maybe who you really believe can or has a chance to win the Super Bowl?
I don't know if it – I mean, Aaron Rodgers, obviously. Green Bay was going to be in the mix because still, to me, that's the best player on the planet when it comes to the NFL. J.J. Watt, as good as he is, and look, Deshaun Watson has been incredible. He's probably your rookie of the year, and Leonard Fournette would be a close second. I still don't give really Houston a chance. They would have won the AFC South, and they still might, but I wouldn't have put them in that mix. Odell Beckham, I mean, they were defeated before he went down, so I don't know how big of a deal that was. I think Tampa's underachieved. I would say more so just based on what I've seen on the field, I've changed my Super Bowl at least prediction, because New England's defense is still garbage. They really miss Julian Edelman. And the Atlanta Falcons, I don't know what has happened. I mean, you blow a 17-point lead at home in the second quarter to Jay Cutler and the Miami Dolphins, a team that couldn't manufacture 1 point against New Orleans. That's a big-time problem. But if you put me on the spot right now, I really don't know. I have no idea. Watching Kansas City against your Steelers this past weekend, they didn't look good. They couldn't do anything offensively. I mean, I think it's awesome, though, because, you know, where we are in the NBA, and people will, the hyperbole of Golden State losing game one to Houston. Look, they lost by 29 game one last year to San Antonio. Golden State, barring an injury, is still going to win the championship. And the NFL, the awesome thing about this, I really have no idea who's going to be in the Super Bowl this year.
It's great. It's really good stuff. LT, always appreciate the time, man. Look forward to catching up next week.
Yeah, Cole, safe travels to Fayetteville. I'll talk to you next week, man.
Thanks a lot. Lance Taylor, Chalk's Roundtable with us. More responses coming in on our Cole question of the day. At @ThorAU_WDE quotes the tweet with Jeff Brom. Brad Buchanan, who works for the SEC Network, responds, need a, quote, none of these option. Cousin Bailey responds, if Gruden's plane ever stops circling Knoxville's airport, then him.
This show.
Or you could have just voted for him.
This show could have just can't end soon enough.
Well, let's start the process and take a break. Back with more right after this. Welcome back in. Cube Show. Sports Radio 730-1039 The Yump. I got somehow locked in. I was flipping around trying to find sporting events on TV last night.
Yeah.
I got locked TV. Into the Law and Order Menendez Brothers things.
Oh, is that on now?
I don't know what episode it was last night, but yeah, I got kind of
stuck
on that. Yeah, I watched it for a little while.
What'd you think?
I had the basketball on the other TV, and I was like, I can skip some baseball. It's not going to really matter.
Feels like a totally made-for-TV kind of, like, would-not-be-interesting-at-all kind of thing, but I don't know, maybe.
But when you go back-to-back nights, like tonight, it's not on tonight.
Well, I mean, Walking Dead doesn't go back-to-back nights.
Fair. Mm-hmm. But that's not going to be, like, a whole season of deals. It's going to be, like, two or three of them, right?
I don't know.
That's the way I understood it. So, I don't know. Let's get to our TV listings for tonight. I always feel like somebody's watching me. And I have no privacy. Oh, oh. I always feel like somebody's 7 p.m. tonight on CBS. Survivor. Heroes, Healers, and Hustlers.
Now, this thing's been on for a while. This Menendez Brothers. Last night was episode 4.
Well, so I'm behind.
And the week three was just the
one before was episode 3?
What? Yeah, it was. Look at that. It was. Hold on, let me see. That is episode...
Thanks for clearing that up.
2. Episode 2.
Arky for you tonight on BET, 6 p.m., Madea's Family Reunion.
Do you see that there's another Madea's Halloween movie coming out?
I don't know what it is.
It's like Boo 2?
I got nothing for it. I've never seen a Tyler Perry movie or show, and I can tell just by the previews I have no interest in it.
Don't tell me that you don't like Madea. She's a sassy black grandma who's played by a dude, but she runs around like speaking the truth, brandishing a pistol whenever she wants to, and whipping some ass if she has to.
Food Network tonight, 7 p.m., Halloween Baking Championship. You got to give out rings for that? Onion rings.
Oh, look what you did. Look what you did.
Iron Man 3 tonight on FX, 6 p.m. HBO has Jackass the movie tonight at 7 p.m.? It's been a while.
Much recent, yeah. Although my wife was watching Princess Diaries over the weekend on HBO. So, like, they just run old stuff, too. So,
HGTV tonight. Arky, this does not sound politically correct. Uh-huh. 7 p.m. Brothers Take New Orleans?
Brothers Take Ferguson? Is that they meant?
That doesn't sound right.
Hey, by the way, there's 8 episodes of this
of the
Menendez Brothers. So
yeah. I'm halfway through, even though I've only seen one. Half of one?
You came in right in the middle.
Apparently, I got in right at the right time because they basically told you the whole story when I was tuning in. So,
well, you must have gotten
I'll never
in the
be able
of the
to
show.
See not Tony Soprano's wife and not see her as Tony Soprano's wife in a
oh,
show.
Oh, yeah. I've never seen the Sopranos.
Isn't she in,
but I recognize like, her face.
Isn't she in Nurse Betty or
Edie
Orange
Falco.
Is the New Black? She's in one of those shows.
Yeah, Edie Falco is hot.
If stop
hot,
it.
You mean
stop.
Nurse Jackie.
Nurse Jackie, yeah. What did I say? Nurse Betty? I don't know what that is.
She graduated at the State University of New York at Purchase.
Good job.
At Purchase? After graduation, she worked
yeah,
as a
she
clown.
Purchased her degree, and as soon as she purchased it, she graduated.
I gotta find out what else she's been in.
I got a really confusing one for you tonight. This was beyond an explanation. CMT tonight, 7 p.m. I'm not sure what's happening here.
Sure.
This goes against everything we've been taught. CMT Artists of the Year live.
This is exactly what's supposed to be happening.
Right, but why now?
Why start doing that now?
I mean, we've had like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and Jaws.
And Home Alone.
Why? Now we're reverting back to country music television?
I like this. I like this a lot. Did you know?
They should be marketing this one night only.
You know, the CMA Awards.
Country Music Returns.
Country Music Awards are on like CBS. I feel like that would be
no,
perfect.
I don't know because I have no interest in it and would never watch it.
You should know because a promo would have shown up at some point. You would have been like, oh, what? That's weird. Shouldn't that be on CMT? Yes, it should. The BET Awards are on BET. The MTV Awards are on MTV. The Country Music Awards, even though it's the Country Music Academy?
Mm-hmm.
Academy or Association? I think it's Academy.
All right, let's get to another one.
Yeah. Whoop, wrong one.
Another one.
Strange thing happened at a press conference for a boxing match. Now, we've seen these face-offs become heated and aggravated and nasty, and you get some bad things that can go down.
Yeah, Mike Tyson grab a crotch. That's what he does.
Things got a bit strange for a boxing event that's going to take place in Norway. During the press conference to hype a women's boxing bout between Norwegian unified welterweight world champion Cecilia Brachas and Swedish challenger Michaela Lauren. Lauren decided she would mess with her opponent a little bit.
Yeah, get in her head.
She kissed her.
What?
Yeah. Reached over and kissed her on the lips.
I like this approach a lot. I definitely would like to go see the replay of this approach.
Brachas and Lauren will meet in a 10-round contest in Stoke, Norway, Saturday night.
Probably late night, too.
Can you imagine, like, Conor McGregor doing this to Floyd Mayweather?
Oh, yeah. That'd be hot. I mean, that'd be interesting. That'd be very interesting. What if Michael Sam was an MMA fighter? I think he'd do this, right?
I don't know.
That'd freak a guy out, man. Guys in these combat sports aren't used to that.
No. I mean, it's definitely one way to throw your opponent off.
See the Mike Tyson biting Evander Holyfield's ear if he just went in there and whispered in it?
Yeah.
And nibbled on it? It's like, I'm going to make you my bitch. My love bitch in the bed.
The champion, Michaela, did laugh it off after it happened. So there was not really any animosity. So we're back tomorrow, 6 to 10, Roundtable Knicks.